You're listening to Builderpedia, your go-to podcast for everything you need to know about property. By covering the entire journey from buying your home through to design, building, selling, and everything in between, we'll help you fill in the blanks and bring your property vision to life.
Welcome to Builderpedia. Today's guest, Warren Livesey from Buy Airspace. Welcome, Warren.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Appreciate it.
So we've been talking, we've caught up the other day, and I'm really fascinated by what you're doing. I think it's something that has occurred to a lot of people, but a lot of people have thought about it and you're actually doing it. But maybe just give us a bit of background. Well, what's it? Buy Airspace is your company? I guess you buy airspace. What does that mean?
So yes, I part enjoy architecture, but primarily an accountant. Been doing airspace development for the last, coming up to nearly 30 years. 10 of that was in London, New
years,
York.
You say, yeah.
10 years in London, New York, and 20 here. So I've been fortunate to be involved in about 120 odd airspace developments, which ultimately are the biggest part here is multi-owned business blocks that obviously have quite a large type area. And we kind of divide up the common area space that's not actually seen as any kind of financial asset. It's actually seen as a liability because you have to repair it and replace it. But ultimately, airspace is the air above a property that hasn't yet been developed. So when you buy a property, you earn the airspace from heaven to hell, is what they say. But it's just the council that restrict how much of that airspace you can actually enjoy. And primarily that they can fly helicopters and planes above your airspace. And if there's any gold or diamonds underneath your building, that's theirs too. Yeah, look, it's airspace has become really popular of late, more to do with overseas, with density areas. So where cities are obviously generally cheaper for the government to have new dwellings, because obviously going urban sprawl is expensive regarding infrastructure. Yeah, so we're just looking at existing buildings where we can ultimately add new dwellings above them.
So I've been looking at this, like I've been thinking about it for like 100 years. Like I remember years ago driving or somewhere near the harbour, near Glebe, and looking at these big pitched roofs above apartments that are almost waterfront going, wow, the view that there's this void up there and the space is already there. And I feel like it. Someone should put something in there and the space is already there. So, yeah, I think it's occurred to a lot of people. What actually made you get into it, or what was the genesis of you getting into it and starting it? And was that something you learned in London and then applied here? Is that something that you learned from other people? What was the starting point?
Yeah, like overseas, it's actually quite common. When in New York, you would be sold not just a view, but a sky view. So just by looking, you know, just having a view of the sky was seen as a value proposition. But yeah, it's ultimately adaptive reuse or retrofitting. It's kind of making the best of what we've got and ultimately adding on top of that. But primarily, a lot of our older buildings, I think 50% of Australia's buildings are close to 30 plus years old, if not older. So they're needing some major work to them. And generally, owners obviously can't afford to maintain their buildings to a high level. So they kind of just do what they need to do to their buildings, like kicking the can down the road. They don't do any major renos as yet because obviously it's a huge investment.
Yeah, and sometimes slowly just become more and more decrepit and broken, right? You know, you see buildings slowly erode just because
a lot of patchwork. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So in our cities, the most common building, funny enough, is multi-owned. It's a 3-4-story walk-up strata block with 8 to 12 units with about a 300 square meter tiled roof that ultimately needs replacing because they're not fire compliant. They're generally a void, empty void above the top floor owners where obviously fire can easily jump. So yeah, look, we are pushing it here in Sydney first, primarily, because obviously we have a housing crisis and the government's focused very much in the city to knock down and rebuild. which is getting a lot of pushback, of course, from NIMBYs and people living in their suburbs. And everyone's a YIMBY in their backyard until it's actually in their backyard. Then people aren't so open-minded about it so much. So, yeah, so what we're looking at is just wanting to build one to two additional levels above existing buildings to create this kind of gentle density over communities and neighborhoods where it's not going to be as noticed, I guess, as a full knockdown and rebuild. So it's a lot quicker. It's a lot more efficient. It's cheaper, obviously, because you're not having to buy land again. You don't have these huge holding costs in construction because the owner's already in the building while you're doing the planning. And a lot of these buildings, they need to replace their roof anyway. So instead of spending $200,000-$400,000 replacing it, we're saying spend $500,000-$600,000-$700,000 and actually have a dwelling that can be sold.
So I'm curious to go back to what was the first step? Because you're now an established, we'll call you an airspace dealer for you've done many, but what was the first thing? Like, when did you know that this was something you were going to do? What's the genesis of Warren Lipsey getting into,
It was actually grabbing. It was getting a rooftop apartment and literally seeing that little manhole in the top floor and wanting to stick my head up into the roof void. Climbed up and there, obviously, like most roof voids, it's dust and dirty and dangerous to walk around. But I was very lucky enough to be able to push up the tiles and look at this gorgeous view, which is pretty much uninterrupted. So obviously, it has a lot of privacy, a lot of light, and it just seemed like a waste of space, really. So yeah, it started moving up into that area, did attic conversions primarily. And then obviously, as in London in 2020, obviously they've kind of made airspace development a provisional or permitted development rights. This was done in 1996 in New York already. You'll notice in Paris, nearly 90% of the buildings have these Mansard rooftop homes now, which is ultimately wood and cladding. Same with Barcelona and across Europe. So they're just becoming more well-known as in using what we've got.
Yeah. And so you mentioned NIMBYs and YIMBYs. You'd think you'd have the support of both. I mean, I'm pretty sure you got YIMBYs on side, but do you still have people pushing back on rooftop development?
We actually, of the knockdown rebuild compared to airspace development, we have huge support from NIMBYs because ultimately we're keeping the existing building. No one is selling out. No one's moving away. There's no huge stamp duties and holding costs and all these expensive development type of areas where NIMBYs can ultimately fund their building rejuvenation from the sale of their rooftop airspace. So if anything, you know, we're putting money in the pockets of NIMBYs to be able to produce more homes, but without having to leave where they grew up and something that they obviously.
Yeah, yeah. Enjoy. So, I mean, you managed to do the impossible, unite YIMBYs and NIMBYs are holding hands together. it does make sense because the NIMBY push is like, it's such so wasteful. I think they can't have it both ways. They can't really. Yeah, it's very awkward to mount an argument about rejuvenation and reuse and pushing back on new development, but not like embrace rooftop and airspace, right? So you've got a free pass. So is government behind it?
The government has been very focused on knockdown rebuilds, primarily because obviously they're high tax friction. These knockdown rebuilds, the developers coming in, paying a huge whack in stamp duty, paying all the consultants, the banks, the real estate agents, then paying interest rates on $5, $6, $8, $10 million worth of funds for numbers of years. And then obviously, you know, the new owners are coming in and they paying their stamp duties and all the costs involved, where airspace, we don't have all that. We ultimately are replacing something that's already in existence. Yes, there is stamp duty on the new rooftop homes, but it's not on the existing homes. So where a developer can come along and knock down a building and add GST onto all the new properties, sadly, existing owners, they can't do a refit and actually get their tax back from government. So the government's very much swayed towards this kind of knockdown path. But the issue is that generally one in four buildings will knock down and rebuild when there's a rezoning. So where there's the low, medium rise, as well as the TOD, the transportation-oriented development, which is all great and well. But overseas, they equate to about one in four will knock down and rebuild. So we have three out of four buildings that have this additional height and floor space ratio, which will just sit dormant unless we come along and do some airspace with it. So, yeah, we're just pushing the adaptive reuse portion. I think 1 in 100 projects is adaptive reuse in Sydney so far. 99 are knockdown rebuilds, which is a bit of a shame. And there's obviously.
Yeah, right. And I wanted to go back a step to the name Buy Airspace. I want to know, first of all, who sells airspace? It's the body corporate of the or the owners of the property jointly, right? Sell it. Who buys it? What are they buying? Because you mentioned that you can lease it, or there's, as I understand, there's rights that are purchased. Who buys it and what are they actually buying? What is transacted typically?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, airspace development, which is ultimately above, can be above a single dwelling. It can be a duplex, could be a townhouse. It could be on top of commercial buildings or, you know, town centres. I mean, we've just been focusing primarily on strata because obviously it's one part of the industry that's very lacking in the fact of planning and financial investment. Because there's multiple owners, it creates a kind of herding cats type of scenario. So it's not an easy area, but what we've done is we've just got the international model now, which ultimately recognizes that building owners, they generally don't have the money, the experience, or the time to do these kind of projects. So we're matching up existing owners with developers or investors or downsizers, people that have the financials, has the time and experience to do it, and they can actually do these projects within a 2-year time frame opposed to, you know, 10 years in some instances. But airspace, you're owning the potential of something. And what that ultimately is, on top of an existing building, we create a box, an imaginary box that would go up, say, 3-4 meters above the existing roof, that would go with the circumference of the roof itself. We make a title deed out of that called a stratum. So instead of a strata, it's a separate legal entity that's above the strata itself. So if you have a block of 10, you are now the 11th, but you're a separate legal entity and you have a building management contract with the below owners to get access to your lot, your sky lot, I guess you could call it. Or, of course, you dilute all the unit entitlements of the existing strata owners and then just become one portion of that. But yeah, airspace is going to be big for drones in the future because they're not allowed to fly over our airspace at present, as well as airspace is used for view protection. So where someone may have a beautiful view of the harbor, and now with these latest upzonings, people can possibly build out people's views. So what they do is they buy the airspace above that particular building to prevent anyone from building up into it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, I never even thought of that. But would it be fair to say most commonly it is the airspace of a strata? Because, yeah, you've mentioned a few use cases, but I presume that the most common one would be a strata selling the rights for them to enable an apartment or a penthouse or a couple of apartments to be built on top of an existing block of apartments. Is that the most common one, and what does that transaction look like? You're buying, a developer buys the rights to develop and become a owner. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, the most common would be a duplex. Is someone actually going in a semi, adding another level? That would possibly be the most common, if anything. We're primarily focusing on strata because we're in Sydney and this is where we're needing most of the housing. And most buildings in Sydney are multiple owned because we're in R2, R3, R4 areas. So that's where we're focusing on those areas as well as, but yeah, so airspace, you may be allowed to use it or you may own it. It doesn't mean you can build into it. So the value of airspace only really comes to maturity once council have actually given you the thumbs up and said, yes, you can build up into this area. Otherwise, it's not as valuable. Of course, it's just seen as uninhabited areas or space that could potentially be built into. But primarily, what someone is wanting to do is to present a building construction within the airspace that can then be approved by council. And that will ultimately give you your valuation of that particular space and time.
So I want to just dig into that transaction and what that purchaser gets, because it's a developer, they buy the rights, but obviously they take on the risk of the development and the approval. And so it's literally a contract for the rights to then submit a DA and do that work, and then they have the right. Does that sound about right?
Yeah. So ultimately, the owner's responsibility to establish that there is airspace available. So what they do is they ultimately get a town planner to confirm, or an architect to confirm, that there is airspace and that they can build up higher, which, of course, with the latest low, medium, rise and TOD, you know, buildings can add another one to two additional levels. But primarily, they confirm that airspace is there, can be built into, as well as the building can potentially take any additional weight. So that may be removing a 30-ton tiled roof and putting on a 40-ton, maybe a built-off site or a modular type of construction or whatever that may be, in order to know what the comparison times are. And then we ultimately tender out that particular airspace to developers or to investors or downsizers who ultimately would love to build up into that particular space. And they negotiate once they've found the developer or whomever they'd like to come through. And funny enough, 50% of the time, it's actually someone in the building already that wants to build up into the roof. So ultimately, they choose, we negotiate a call option contract, which basically allows the developer or the owner to actually go to council on the owner's behalf and submit a development application on behalf of all the owners. And that once the DA is potentially approved, that's what kind of ignites all of the bylaws that have been agreed to prior to, which then says that the developer can come along and access the roof and can build this new rooftop home or penthouse and could potentially sell it and share the proceeds 50-50 with the owners. But during the whole process, the owners still own the airspace. They don't relinquish ownership, which is great because it just limits their liability. So if the developer or owners were to go bankrupt or something to that description, then the owners aren't stuck in litigation. They can continue the build themselves and then obviously sell. But primarily, the owners are wanting to capture the views and the financial reward from going at one additional level and then using this money cleverly to repair and rejuvenate. So that may be new windows, doors, fire upgrades, plumbing, electrical, anything to that description, which ultimately will increase their unit value, as well as reduce or remove all the, you know, capital work funds or finances that they're needing to pull together. So look, it's a really great sustainable option for existing owners that don't want to sell out and move.
Yeah. And so I think you touched on a point that, just to circle back, a lot of these buildings need work done and need that funded. And a lot of buildings have a fire order in place to improve their fire safety and they don't have the funds to do it. So it's a bit of a lifeline for some owners. But the thing that is igniting or maybe putting a rocket under is something you alluded to, which is LMR and Todd, which is essentially, for people who aren't familiar with that terminology, I guess it's changes, it's upzoning, right? Yeah. It's making areas that are close to transport, areas that are in a place where people want to live and there's a shortage of apartments. It's actually an up zone, right? So has that accelerated roof space for you?
Oh, look, it's gone from zero to hero from the moment that happened. The reason being is certainly in across most cities in Australia, we haven't actually had the space available. Most buildings had already built up to that height allowance. And a lot of these councils have actually reduced the height allowance in these areas. So it made building up really difficult. So only thing that we've been able to do is really attic conversions and the likes. So yeah, so with LMR and TOD, you know, within 800 meters of 171 business areas in and around Sydney can now all go up 1 to 2 additional levels. So it's where the owners now get to choose whether or not they want to sell out and move away and kind of pass the proceeds over to a developer to knock down and rebuild. Or as we see overseas, 3 out of 4 won't. They'll just sit there with this older building quite happy and content. So, and rightfully so. So we're just kind of knocking on the doors of these 20,000 strata buildings and just saying, look, you've actually got a choice here. You can either knock down, rebuild, or how about replacing that old rooftop with a new lightweight rooftop home, which we haven't had the technology really to do it up until now with, you know, these new lightweight cross-laminated timbers and green steel. We can actually replace some of these rooftops even lighter than their existing worn-out buildings.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a look at a rooftop the other day and riddled with problems, riddled with poor drainage that had patch on patch on patch. So it's an opportunity to really to fix a roof, because a lot of these buildings have persistent niggles and problems and wet
and damp gone. Issues, right? Yeah. Drainage is gone. Yeah, of course.
So insulation is poor.
Well, it's just really, we're trying to make the best of what we've got is the reality of it, opposed to starting from scratch, which it's just become too expensive. Labor has gone up 30%. Materials have gone up 30%. You know, $1 million to build a house, it's diabolical. But we do have a lot of existing spaces empty that can be quite cheaply rearranged and with low. Because obviously a lot of it is built off-site, is then craned on. So then the owners aren't actually having to deal with months of scaffolding. You know, it's a pretty surgical in-and-out type process.
And how important is it for to pick the right developer and pair the right people with the right team? Because I can imagine as a builder putting a rooftop, whatever, building on a rooftop, dismantling a roof with, I don't know, 30 people living below me. If you don't get that right, it's highly problematic, isn't it? So how do you make sure that when you're selling airspace, you're not buying a problem?
Good point. Look, a lot of these older buildings, they are, you know, they're needing major works done to them. The roof needs replacing anyway. The plumbing, electrical, fire upgrades. 50% of our buildings don't meet fire standards. So they're needing these new windows, they're needing new electrical, some of it's still cloth coated. You know, there's behind the electric panels, there's still asbestos. So look, these buildings generally need a major work anyway. So we very rarely would we ever go to like a newish building, you know, 5, 10 years old and build up above them. It's normally, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years of age. And it's these kind of buildings that would need the owners to leave anyway for a period of time. Because if they were just replacing the roof,
right,
plumbing, replacing the fire doors, you know, they can't live in that particular area. So, yeah, we're picking where we'd need to have scaffolding up anyway to fix up these buildings. So a lot of the airspace developers will now be these remedial builders, guys that are already on site. They're replacing the roofs, they're replacing the gutters anyway. So they're just replacing it now with a rooftop home instead.
Yeah, and if you get the wrong people, I guess my point was, if you get the wrong builder up there, even if it is 50 years old and broken and leaky, it can turn a problem into a disaster. If you have the wrong team there, I can see how that could go pear-shaped, and how much, like from a build perspective, how much project management and time and care would have to go into getting it right. They may move out, but you still have intact apartments below you, right? So how can you be sure that the rights you're selling go to someone who's aligned with you in terms of quality and will do a good job that doesn't leave the building? Because the last thing you would want is to have a building that you've gone to spend money to fix these problems only to have persistent roof leaks or other things happen, you know? So how are you confident as a seller of airspace that you're going to get a good outcome?
It's kind of like picking the right builder for remedial work, right? So it's picking someone that obviously knows the area, has got projects that they've already done that the owners can see, touch, feel, review, walk around. And of course, builders that are financially lucrative in the fact that they are going to be able to fund these kind of projects, because you're wanting to make sure that this is all kind of done and dusted prior to anything actually happening. But yes, it's choosing the right people that do it. So if you're going to do a rooftop development, choose someone that knows what they're talking about, not just from a structural point of view, but from a legal way. I know a couple of owners that have wanted to do it themselves and are still sitting 10, 15 years later having these inner problems, because owners kind of buy and sell in and out, and obviously to be a part of the OC or the committee, it's a voluntary position. So people volunteer, some don't. So primarily what we're wanting to do is get a group of people involved that know what they're doing. So, you know, would it be that have the team, have the finance, have the time and the experience to do it? And of course, have the money in order to work straight away. So where we can do prefabricated work, one does do, but overseas, what they do is they basically cover the whole building. They put up scaffolding and then they put plastic over the top of it. So everything's kind of water sealed in before they do any major work. But like with anything, Matt, it's choosing the right team.
Choosing the right team. I mean, also, how do you align the strata committee? Because I guess...
Have I lost you?
I'll tell you my experience with strata committees, which I may have mentioned before, like when we had a chat, like they come to you, they're like, have this problem. So this is from a maintenance or doing work for strata. And they're like, we really want to fix it properly. We want to do it this time. We've had this thing for years and we really want to do this properly. And so we put time into going, okay, to do it properly, you need to do this and you need to do that. And here's how much it'll cost. And I almost every time they've gone, too much. We're just going to bog it up. So my experience of strata is hard to align everyone. Everyone's got a different idea. And you put a proposal together that's like, this is going to, you've had this problem for 20 years. You've patched it and you've patched it. Here's a way to fix it that's going to alleviate the problem, make it go away. And they're like, yeah, that's a great idea. And you present the solution and the budget. And then you sort of don't hear much. And then you're like, oh, no, we got this other guy to just patch it again. Right? That's my experience of strata. And generalizing, they're not all the same. Some are very good and just go, right, we got to do this properly. But more often than not, very hard to get alignment of the committee. So what's your strategy for getting committee alignment, getting them to agree, getting them to sell? Like, what's your process and how do you make them agree?
Money talks. Your average strata in Sydney has about a $500,000 capital works plan that they happen to fund somehow. If strata owners have to fund that themselves, they have to pay, you know, post-tax dollars. So if they each have to pay a special levy of 100 grand, they have to earn 130, 140 grand to be taxed to put that money into the sinking fund ultimately. So yeah, money does talk where, you know, they're needing to fund these parts. Now there's two things that are pushing. Primarily, obviously, now the Department of Fair Trading can actually just walk into a strata building at the present moment and put an order not just on fire, but as well as maintaining common area space. So they can put a fire audit or just a degree of maintenance on these particular buildings where they won't be able to just kick the can down the road, per se. But primarily, look, it's not easy, absolutely. But what we try and do is we simplify it. So if owners were having to do or wanted to do their own rooftop development, they'd have to come together 14 times and vote and get a majority of 75% or more in New South Wales to pick the architect, to pick the developer, to pick the finances, to pick colors, pick the design. So what we do is we speediate that and we just put it into one step. So by tendering out the airspace to developers, and when they find one, we negotiate a call option contract, and that kind of summarizes the next 13 steps in a row so that the owners only have to vote the once and then kind of put their voting power to the new developer who kind of does all the votes there afterwards. So we've concertinaed it. We've basically sandwiched all the decision-making process into one contract, which has bylaws in place that are triggered at certain points. So primarily when council have approved the development, then it creates a new lot. It then provides permission to get access to the routes. Then it provides for a new title to happen. So it's kind of, if this happens, then that will occur. So we've condensed the whole decision-making process into one kind of easy step.
Yeah. And so what do owners need to do? Like, what's the first step? If you're an apartment owner and you're like, this is potential, what's the first step? How do you realize that potential? Or you're on a strata committee and you're looking at this big vacant roof space, or there's more often than not, there's a roof with some plant and you're going, oh, the views are pretty good from the top level apartment. They'd be spectacular. We think that's worth looking at. So what's the steps? What do they need to do?
Look, I mean, the free option is they can actually go to council and determine, and even council websites, determine what their height allowance is. So knowing that a building is 3 stories, the average story is about 3 meters. So they know that the building is 9 meters high, plus, you know, a pitched roof of 2 meters. You know, if council website were to say that you could build up to 15, you kind of know you have that opportunity to kind of go up. But yeah, look, ask any professional person, being it an architect, engineer, town planner, even a real estate agent can help get them into the right kind of build part. The basics of it, if you've got a tiled roof above your building, there's a very good chance you can build into it with existing use rights. So it's assuming you can do something more so than not, especially with councils needing more dwellings, you know, and don't have any extra land. You know, they're very open-minded in regards to parking requirements, especially, and when you do need them, but primarily providing funding options where we've actually got discounts from councils that were actually wanting to do an airspace development opposed to a knockdown rebuild. And I think nearly in looking lately in Bondi area with Waverley Council, nearly 1 in 5 new developments are an airspace relative development. They are building up above an existing building opposed to a complete knockdown rebuild. So going up and down Campbell Parade and Hall Street, you'll see it's becoming more popular for sure.
And do you need views? Like, what if you don't have any views? Is it still viable? Because we all know, I guess, if you're in property or you've been looking at real estate sales and particularly apartment sales, we all know that the taller the apartment, the better the view, the more valuable that apartment is. So are they viable for things that just look out onto other buildings and not necessarily have harbour views or city views or beach views?
Oh, look, absolutely. Australia is the most expensive real estate in the world. Therefore, the airspace above that real estate is the most expensive in the world. So London, Paris, New York, just to give an example, London's on track to build 180,000 new rooftop homes coming up. So it's relatively, you're not having to purchase any additional land, which would be $3,000-$5,000 a square meter. It's generally lightweight construction, so you're not having to lay foundations, you're not having to plumb in extra roads or gas, electricity, water rates into these things. So, and it's generally quite quick so you're not having to wait multiple portions to it. So it's a quick, sustainable way of doing it. It requires less materials and labor. So yeah, it's definitely possibly the most profitable real estate out there, because ultimately the big ticket items have already been taken care of, the land and the holding costs.
Yeah. And so if someone wants to get in touch with you, can they do that? Can you help them? Can you guide them? What's the process for engaging with your business, BuyAirSpace?
Yeah, so just buyairspace.com.au, or contacting myself or anyone like yourself, Matt, that can actually look and guide people to say, yes, it looks like you do have airspace above you. You can estimate how high a building is and look at the town, the actual building requirements and quote on it. But it's definitely an option. I think, to give you an example, in London, you can't knock down buildings anymore. You actually have to prove you can't adaptive reuse that building prior to knocking it down, where Australia, I can see us slowly getting there as we focus primarily on sustainability. But there will be a time where we can't knock down all our heritage type buildings. We need to kind of make the most of what we've got.
Yeah, but even the building I'm in, built in the 90s, I think, that I'm in now, I'm not an owner. We've got our office here, but they've had a DA to demolish the whole building, which has a row of shops and a row of offices and a car park out the back. And they're going to demolish and excavate a car park below in the basement and then build three stories with two levels of apartments. And I'm looking at it going, it's not going to stack up. It's not big enough. It's not high enough. You're not going to get, I'm looking at the build cost and the basement excavation alone. And I'm like looking at it going, I don't think they're going to make their money back. So sure enough, we've renewed our 12-month lease, but I understand, because I've looked at it and I've gone, as time goes on, it's going to be less and less viable. It's not viable now. So in 12 months' time, I'm presuming labor costs drop, right? So I'm kind of going, well, they've had a level above approved. Why not just go extend up the level?
Yeah.
Just go up one level. Perfectly good building. I mean, obviously it's
lacking the
dated, but the more I think about it, the more I'm like, well, what about this? What about that building? What about that? There's so many buildings that are just not viable because they're too small and then they can't get approval to be tall enough to be viable for a knockdown rebuild.
And this is what's happened with the LMR and TOD, is where they're now uplifted all these buildings. A lot of them are three-story that can go four. It's not viable to knock down a three-story building and build only, one additional level, really.
That's right.
That's what's stopping. So what we're saying is just replace your existing roof with something extra that's kind of high valued and something that needs replacing anyway. So look, I definitely, as an accountant, we focus on doing the financial feasibilities and, knock down, rebuild will give you that much profit, or see if you can do an airspace development and see where the profit lies there. So it's just an alternative to the knock down, rebuild option.
Yeah. And profit and development risk is reduced because you're not.
You know what you're dealing with? Yeah.
You know what you're dealing with? I mean, obviously you got to access it, but I think hugely reduces the overall development risk, because by the time you get down to the by the time you get it approved, get a finance, get down to the basement, so much time has elapsed and the outlay is incredible, right? So
on a risk adjusted basis and taxes and stamp duties and GST and all these things that 50% of the build cost is government charges.
Absolutely.
Which we don't have in airspace because we don't have the stamp duty.
Yeah, exactly right. You're just hugely reducing your risk profile on that.
Yeah, we will see. It's popular overseas. I think Australia will come around, especially with these.
And particularly with like a harbour city where it's all about the harbour and view. And I feel like around the harbour is going to be more harbour or beach. Or those upmarket areas are certainly where it's
more
where
in it for them, for sure. Yeah,
absolutely.
And you're looking at high tier.
I think that's a good place to wrap up. So, Warren, tell me the website again.
Biospace.com.au.
Biospace.com.au. How you say it is how you spell it. And yep. People can jump on there and get in touch or fill in a form, I presume, and find you. And you can give them some advice and point them in the right direction.
Great, man. Thanks
so much for being a guest on Buildopedia. And we look forward to checking in again in a few years, because I think this is something that is going to be huge.
I'm banking on it. Thanks, man. Appreciate the opportunity to share this with you and your listeners.
All the best, Warren. Thank you. You've been listening to Buildopedia. We've had Warren Livesey from Biospace, biospace.com.au, if you want to reach out, and if you want to check us out and our blog, buildopedia.au. Thank you all.
You've been listening to Buildopedia. Please remember to like us and share our episode with your friends. We'd love your comments and suggestions. And we have a new website, buildopedia.au, where you can get in touch or leave a question and check out our blog.